tremendous talk. We got the industry tea and the jokes. Actors, directors, musicians, and more. You're listening to Tremendous Talk.
Hey everyone, I'm Law.
And I'm Ash, and this is the Tremendous Talk Podcast.
Yes, each week, join us as we guide you through the realms of Hollywood and beyond while we speak to industry professionals in the spotlight.
So grab a boba tea and leave your shoes at the door. Welcome to Tremendous Talk.
Ash, how you doing today?
I'm good. Not gonna lie, I stayed up all last night watching Almost Famous, so I'm a little sleepy.
Oh, no. I mean, hey, that's a great movie, so I mean, that's at least the silver lining in everything, right? For those of you who don't know, my name is Law. I'm a Filipino and Indian actor, host, and filmmaker who is kind of having a frustrating time figuring out his hairstyle these days.
Is it getting long? Or are you just like navigating?
I cut it differently. And now it's like the part wants to be where it wants to be. Sometimes it falls and my head looks like Hey Arnold. It's like really wide. Sometimes it's perfect. Sometimes it curls in. Sometimes it curls out. You have wavy and curly hair. You get it. Like it's hard to tame the beast. And when it gets longer, my waves start coming out a little bit. But I guess that's my fun fact for the day.
You gotta just let it do what it do. And I'm Ashley. I am a mixed Filipino-American actor, musician, and publicist who I literally cannot stop eating chamoy. I'm like sucking it down. I'm drinking it at this point, just plain chamoy. And yeah, how's your day, Law? How you doing?
You know, I kind of am just starting it, but you know, it's an exciting time in the podcast because by the time you guys are listening to this, it's going to be June, which means Happy Pride Month, everyone. Woo-hoo! Happy Pride, Ash.
Happy Pride, Law.
Yes. We're very excited to bring a bunch of queer talent and speakers onto the podcast this month. So definitely stay tuned for that. But what are some of the things that we're going to be doing to celebrate Pride and the LGBTQ plus community, Ash?
Ah, dude, you know, me and you as reformed emo kids or current emo kids, however we feel in that current day, we're listening to LGBTQ musicians first and foremost and researching more, supporting LGBTQ owned businesses and nonprofit organizations, watching, I mean, there's so many amazing stories right now in entertainment and film that have these, like, I still need to see Strange World, dude. I haven't seen Strange World.
It was good. I thought it was really good. I was really sad when it flopped. It was really good. And strong gay storyline, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a new season of Queer Eye, which I really want to watch, too. That's not even, like, the tip of the iceberg. There's so many, and it's awesome.
Jazz Tenke is the senior artisans editor at Variety, who covers the artisans who make the magic happen. A Filipino Brit, lover of Meryl Streep, who prefers cake over pie, a fan of Sleeping Beauty and MGM musicals, and one of our favorite people. It's so exciting.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I mean, it's not every day we get to do our week's obsessions with our guests. And Jazz, thank you for joining us today.
Yay!
we're talking about kind of the things that we're consuming right now. I'm catching up on Barry right now. I'm watching a lot of a YouTube channel called Korean Englishman just because it's really wholesome, easy to watch, and I love watching food. But what are you watching right now, Jazz? Like, what's the vibe at home?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Succession is a must see Sunday night viewing thing every Sunday at 6 p.m. I did miss one episode and I was just like, I do not need to, I had to avoid Twitter that day. But no, we're all caught up. So Succession, absolutely. And then Yellow Jackets, completely obsessed with season two. I love everything that's happening, and I have so many questions and theories, and they're probably all wrong. And then if you know me, I love my reality show, so RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars season 8.
Of course. We're already like in our producing meetings where I was like, which queens can we get onto the podcast? Who would be down? We were telling Ash, you have to watch Drag Race. It's like,
I have to catch up. I know I'm in love with it already, and I've seen bits of it, but it's just one of those things that, like, you have to watch all of it. And it's just like, it's like the Grey's Anatomy of drag, right? Like, it's so many seasons and so many episodes.
No, it's like the MCU of drag. They like exactly. have like crossover events and there's comeback seasons where like queens from previous seasons would come. It's a really entertaining show.
But you know what I did watch? I have seen RuPaul's Masterclass, and it is life-changing masterclass that class is. So 10 out of 10 recommend.
Here's the thing. You can jump in anytime, especially now, like season 8 All-Stars just started. And that's like what Law was saying. Like, you know, they bring back like queens from previous seasons. Just jump in. And then when you have time, go back in and start watching.
It's also like, for me, it's like the Doctor Who. When you watch Doctor Who and you start with like a modern season and you go back, you're like, oh, the production quality is so different. Drag Race is kind of like that too. It's like you can exactly. see the budget get injected into the show yep. as the seasons go. So you want the more exciting stuff. But if you want to learn about personalities, then jump back probably.
I'm going to have to like, this is one of those shows where I'm going to have to write like a timeline and have a sheet of paper by me and just write like, okay, in 2023, this is what happened. And then in 2022, this is who won. And then I'm just like Wikipedia-ing everything while it's going on.
You're
going
to get sucked into the lore. But just moving on with this week's obsessions, as like we talk about what we're eating a lot right now. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I've been making a lot of Filipino spaghetti. It just lasts so long. So that's kind of just been my diet recently. What are you guys using? Are you reading anything? Are you eating something? Like, what else is going on in your lives?
Jazz, I want to hear what you're obsessed with right now.
What am I eating right now? Oh my gosh. I'm trying to get back on the healthy track of just protein, vegetables, and fruit. I know it sounds so basic and boring, but we had family in town from New York, and you know, Jen's family is like Italian. So we had that food for like 8 days, and like spaghetti carbs for like 8 days or 11 days is just like my body's like, what are you eating? Like, give me chicken, give me rice, give me noodles.
How are we not asleep right now?
Exactly. Reading, I just literally ordered Killers of the Flower Moon, which is based on Scorsese's new movie.
The movie, yeah.
Yeah. So I really want to read that before I see the movie and just get that insight. And then I'm absolutely obsessed with Screen Age, which is by Fenton Bailey, the producer of Drag Race and co-founder of World of Wonder. And it's really just how it's an autobiography, but it's like this intersection of like how TV raised us. Like if you're a kid of like the 80s, the 90s or whatever, it's like we were raised on TV, great TV back then, and that intersection. So it's a really fun book.
Oh, wow.
I'm obsessed with it.
I really want to watch that because I always say that like SpongeBob was my dad. Every time I see you or like see you online or something, you're at a screening, you're moderating something, you're at an event, you're like in some, you're always doing so many things. Okay. And in terms of reading, now I know that you like to read, and I want to know how many, like with Interior Chinatown coming up and all these things, do you read the books of everything that you go over, or do you just like go into a movie blind?
It really depends, truly. Like, most of the time, like, I will go into a movie blind, but I think for the Scorsese one, I really just wanted to read this book. I don't know why, and I don't have time to read, believe it or not. Like, it's just, you know, living in LA, you're in your car all the time. As you said, like, you're going to screenings, you're writing stories, you're doing this, and it's like living in London, or if you live in New York, you can sit on the subway and read. And I'm not an audible book. I don't like listening to like books being read to me. Like, clearly I wasn't into like storytelling when I was a kid. So this is just, it's a rare exception. And then other times, like I'm one of those people that just buys books and they have to, you know, that need to be read or that are halfway read. There are a few books that I will work my way through. Yeah. So, I mean, talk to me in like 3 months and actually ask me if I've read Killers of the Flower Moon. And we'll see where we are with that.
It's going to be the day before you're interviewing Marty Scorsese. just finish it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm on that train too. I have like 3 books that I've half started and I'm also put down. So no judgment here. But yeah, we're excited to have you because I think I'm not to put words in your mouth, Ash, but I think we both look up to you immensely. I mean, you're doing stuff that is really cool. You know, you're uplifting voices of the unsung heroes behind the scenes of these movies and TV shows that we love so much. That's editors, visual effects artists, directors. I want to know about the origin story. How did jazz come to be? How did you get here? How did you find LA? Did you always want to be in entertainment? Yeah, give us the brief 411, I guess, on that.
The brief 411. Okay, so talking about being raised on TV, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer because I was obsessed with LA law and I wanted to be in criminal law, right? And then you get to school and it's like, I still wanted to be a lawyer, like right up to actually doing A-level law. I was born and raised in London, and then, you know, I got the book and it was this thick and I was like, oh, and then the criminal law book was this thick and it was like, but you had to know tort law to study criminal law. And that just went like tits up and I was like, whatever. But I always loved movies, right? Like I was raised on movies and my mom just never censored anything I watched. Like, she's like, if you can't sleep, you can't sleep. You're not coming in my room. So I always loved movies, always was reading like Empire magazine. I actually was buying Variety and the Hollywood Reporter. Like, you know, it's just one of those weird kids. And then, yeah, I didn't go into, you know, journalism or any of that, but I always loved I always watched like the commentary and all of just that whole filmmaking. And then I always loved the Oscars. Like I would stay up late and watch the Oscars in London, never sleep. And there were a few sites I followed, and one was Awards Daily. So anyway, Jen and I, my wife, like we were in a long distance relationship, LA, London. And I was in social media marketing, so I have the marketing background. And Awards Daily was Sasha Stone was like, hey, we're looking for a writer. And I was like, oh, can I do it? I had a little experience in writing. And she basically gave me like an opportunity when I moved here. So I was doing interviews and stuff. And I love talent. But like when you're speaking to editors and costume designers and screenwriters, like you can have 20 minutes and you can break a scene down. And that was when it was just like, I just geeked out and I love those interviews. And then, yeah, I guess after 3 years of doing that and living in LA, there was an opportunity at Variety. And yeah, the rest is history.
Did you? Oh, hold on a second. Like you used to read Variety magazine as a kid, and now you're.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's surreal.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I was just telling Law earlier today that I watched Almost Famous for the first time ever. I know I'm very late to the game, but you almost famous yourself. You did the thing. That's so, oh my gosh. And then you did it with Awards Daily too. Like, how does it feel in retrospect? Do you ever just kind of lay in your bed at night and you're like, wow, I made my dream come true. Like I used to pick up this magazine as a kid and now like I'm a leader in this community.
You know what? It's really humbling, like in all honesty, because you never know like where your life is going to lead and like things happen and you're like, why am I doing this? Like, you know, like, as I said, I moved here and I was in a social media marketing job and I didn't like it for, you know, many other reasons, but like I did it. And, you know, we're Filipinos, we're hardworking and you do it because it's like, got to pay the bills and whatever. And Awards Daily was like kind of my escape. So I was working like 60 hours a week and, you know, going to screenings, writing up interviews in my lunch break, doing interviews at 7 o'clock in the morning and at the weekend. And it's just like LA gives you that opportunity, right, to do it. And it's kind of like you seize the bull by its horns and run with it. And, you know, it was great. And yeah, Variety is just amazing. You know, I do all the artisans there and it's like, it's also an opportunity to, as you say, to like spotlight not just those behind the camera, but also like the minorities also telling the stories.
Mm-hmm. You had a quote in an interview and you just kind of reiterate it now. And it's like, when you get an opportunity, run with it. There had to be a moment where you were like, oh man, I made it. Or like a eureka moment where it's just like, I'm here, you know, whether that's, you know, you go from analyzing award shows to being at the award shows, or like seeing an article about you getting hired at Variety. I want to know, like, what was that moment for you where you were just like, I'm doing all right out here?
You know what it was? It was, I think it was the Oscars in 2018. Like, I was here, and it's kind of like a sad story, actually. It was like my mom was dying, and, you know, like, it was that thing where she'd raised me and she'd put up with all, you know, all the nonsense, like me spending all my money on magazines and videos and going to the movies. And like, I was at the Oscars, and it was that bittersweet moment where, like, I knew I wouldn't make it back in time, but like, I was at the Oscars, and I was like, this is what she wanted me to do. Like, she was the happiest, because she was like, what is sales? Like, what are you doing in marketing? Like, you know, it's like, you're not a doctor. Like, where did I go wrong? And it was like, and this was the moment. And it was like a really like humbling, I did it. And I think she's going to be proud. And like, I think that was really the moment for me of like, you're doing okay, kiddo.
Oh, like, that's really sweet.
You're watching it. You spent years watching it all night, and here you are.
Oh man.
That's I don't even know what to say.
I know. I was just like, oh like, man, that's girl. That's sad and awesome at the same time.
Oh my gosh. Can I ask, like, when she was watching you through your journey, did she ever like give you tidbits of like advice or anything that kind of like sat with you? No.
No. Just no.
Anak, what are you doing there? It's my job.
It's like it's like, yeah, that was it. But the funny thing was, like, there's a story. It was like, I had met RuPaul at one of the, you know, one of these events, and I sent her a photo. And bear in mind, like, she's a Filipino mother who never watched RuPaul's Drag Race. And like, somebody said, oh, I remember your mom. Like, she showed me this photo of you and RuPaul. I was like, of everybody, like, I had interviewed at that up to that point, like, this is the one she latches onto. And it's such a Pinoy mother thing to do, of just the randomness,
yeah,
things 100%. They pull out. It's like, wow, okay, but I've interviewed Viola Davis at this point, like, you know, and other people, and RuPaul's the one that you're latching onto. Okay, dude,
it's something about like parents have that selective memory of like, oh, this is a celebrity. And yeah, maybe that person's a celebrity, but not to me. You know what I mean? I would, like, I'm in a similar boat right now where I, like, show my mom, like, look at all the Avengers I've talked to for work. And they're like, I don't really know what that is. But then they see Julia Roberts, and then it's like, they post about me on Facebook, being like, look at my son. My son met Pretty Woman. And I'm just like, of course that was, like, the one celebrity that you care about.
The relatableness.
Jazz, do you have like a one celebrity, like one that, I don't know, has changed, if you've spoken to them or if you've, I don't know, taken a picture with them or something and it just like ignited you in some way?
I think it would have to be, I mean so many. I mean, they're all so humble, like so many of them are like just humble on it. But I think like moderating the Critics' Choice panel with Lady Gaga and Jared Leto was like that moment of like, you know, like that was very, very cool and special.
You're a monster, yeah?
I'm a little monster. I've been there from the beginning.
Oh. Follow-up question. Who is the worst celebrity? No, I'm just kidding. People love knowing that, though.
They love that question. And you're like, well, how do you answer that? And I'm not going to answer it. I don't even know.
It's like you just like tiptoe around it, right? I want to talk to you about kind of the fandom and the world of the internet. You know, I found you on Twitter. Like, I like in the time where I was like searching for my people, I started seeing Asians in the entertainment industry tweeting at each other, and I was like, I these are my people. On Twitter, though, we can all agree it's a bit of a cesspool sometimes. And then when it comes to like reviews and critics, right? Like, you get the Rotten Tomatoes critics versus audience score, and people make there's always a big discourse about that. As a critic yourself, as someone who contributes to the Rotten Tomatoes score, what do you feel about that discourse when you see it, like, and you know, these ill-informed fans are like making a big deal out of, you know, what is essentially a group of people's opinions. How do you feel about that when it, when you see it happening for, you know, whether it's a blockbuster movie or an indie movie, it happens all the time.
Isn't there always going to be a divide though, between critics and movie going audiences? Like we're never going to see, very rarely do we see eye to eye, right? Like I have to go onto Rotten Tomatoes to find like those films where there's like a 99% audience score and Rotten Tomatoes score. And I think film Twitter also right now is, especially with the way it is, it's just, there are a lot of troll bots too. So it's like if you post an opinion, you're like, I love this film. And somebody comes into your timeline and it's like, well, actually, like, are you being paid by Disney or Marvel? Or like, you know, why do you like this film? It's so awful. You're like, I'm not going to engage with you. Like, let's have a decent conversation. Like the next time I see you, if you're real, and we can have a discussion about why I liked this film and, you know, whatever, because the best piece of advice I ever got from Sasha Stone was, if you don't like a film, don't say anything at all.
Huh.
When I was starting out, she was like, if you do not like a film,
that's actually a great move.
For somebody starting out in this town, it was like really good advice.
Wow, that's like the golden advice of like, if you have nothing nice to say, say nothing at all.
Exactly. It always goes back to that, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's like, we're never going to see eye to eye with like a movie going public.
Are you ever surprised though, when you see critics rate something lower than maybe you saw? Like, I feel like people can get really jaded in this town when they watch movies and stuff, and especially when they've been doing it for a while. Are you ever surprised yourself, or is it always just kind of par for the course for you now?
No, it's like, you know, if that's your opinion, go for it. Like, you know, and we'll have, you know, if I do see, I'm like, I'm just curious what your take was. Like, Beau Is Afraid is a really divisive movie, right? Like, you either love it or you hate it. And it's like, there's no middle ground. It's like, you either sat through 3 hours of it, or you just walked out, or you didn't. Like, you're like, what am I watching? And so it's like, next time I see you, like, let's have this. Babylon was a brilliant example of that, right? Like, Babylon was either loved or hated.
Yeah.
And, you know, people would tear that apart. And you're like, yeah, but there's also this part, which I really loved. And then as humans interacting, like, the people that you are on Twitter versus the people that you are in real life, it's like, you're not like that in real life at all. Like,
yeah.
Why are you a monster on Twitter?
Oh, geez. I do have a question, though, just about, like, how do you do it? So you're talking to all these artisans and you're getting the deep dish on how these movies are made, like whether it be literally covering your hands in paint for hours a night or like sitting in a prosthetic chair for literally 12 hours a day or whatever it may be, like, you know how this movie was made. And how do you like separate knowing the artisans and like knowing the nitty gritty of how the things are made and having a critical eye for something? Because if I was sitting in that chair, I'd be like, whoa, okay, the acting might not be great, but did you know that the prosthetic chair, like the FX are awesome?
Yeah. I think that's the thing, right? Like, you can watch a film and you're like, I'm not too sure, right, about this. Then you learn how the sausage is made, as they say in this industry, right? And it's like, and that kind of changes you. Like, it opens your eye because it helps you understand a different part of the storytelling that you might totally miss for whatever reason. So, you know, you're always open to that. And I'm always like keen to hear those stories, especially like with films. There have been films that I'm like not too keen on. Then I'll like speak to somebody about it, like the costume designer or whatever. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize you never put them in green because you didn't want it to say that they were evil, but you found another way to say they were evil. Like those little things. And it's like, okay. And you get a new appreciation for it.
Oh my gosh. And then you have the power and it's literally your job to do that for the entire world.
Yeah. To be like, here's like a story. Like, yeah.
I was going to say, it's like you're leading the DVD commentary yourself, like the stuff that you like grew up watching, yes, and listening to. You're like, well, these are the questions I have filmmaker? Please answer.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
That's like just, so special.
It's just so neat to be able to like, I love hearing stories about people who grew up as like, you were a film kid and you liked the film industry and now you're like in, you made it happen and you made your life happen. And I just, it just warms my heart so much. And then doing this podcast for people who may be green or not understand the industry or something, it's so like having that career path of picking up a magazine as a kid and now you write for that magazine and you're literally changing people's opinions and thought processes and how they intake these movies and how they literally digest a film. Like you're doing that every day for people literally across the world. That is just so, I can't get over how magical that is. Like you're literally, everything around you is magic and you created this magic and now you literally talk about magic and how the magic is made and how the sausage is made. And I'm dorking out about it. Like it's so neat.
Yeah. If you can't tell, we're like kind of impressed or whatever. This is whatever.
Well, I love everything you guys do too.
Oh, well, good. Because we are always anxious about what we're doing. I do want to talk about, I mean, you have shed a lot of light on like craft union talent, right? Like in a below the line talent. We can't deny that outside of our apartments right now, a strike is going on, right? And it will continue to be brewing for a while. With that happening, with the discussion of AI looming over Hollywood, how do you think the industry moves forward? As someone who has, you know, their finger on the pulse of the industry, what are you feeling right now in this moment?
I think it's the same that everybody's saying, like, they don't know, right? They really don't know, like, A, how long this strike is going to go on for. In terms of AI, I think it is scary, right? Because I use AI technology to transcribe my interviews, right? But am I going to use it to ask my, I mean, I've been tempted to just like download it and just see what would happen if it was like, so write up these 10 questions as if you were interviewing so-and-so. And one day I might do it, like if I have 10 minutes to spare, just to see what comes up. But I feel like, you know, it's never going to replace the human voice. Like it's, I don't think we're going to get to a place where it's going to replace us and it's going to replace writers and it's going to replace actors. Like I just, you know, technology is scary. It's going to obviously develop, but I think there's a lot of uncertainty as to like, are we going to work with it and have it there, right? Like have it in our jobs, but we're not going to get to a place where it takes over the industry. I don't know.
No one does.
It's so hard. It's so hard. But at the end of the day, like it's all about the human experience, right? And connecting to people and how the critics connect with the film in a different way that the audience might connect with the film and how XYZ, like, and how you connect with the film more based on if you know the ins and out of how the sausage was made. I just want to say that as many times as I can. So get prepared for me to say that like 20 times.
Have a drinking game.
Welcome to Sausage Talk.
For the audience.
That's a different podcast.
That is a very different podcast.
With just talking about the human experience and everything, I have to admit, like, your work specifically has changed me in how I see the human experience and how I connect with Hollywood in a different way. Like, I didn't know I would connect with XYZ, and I didn't know, like, that's what you do is you allow these people all over to connect. And as an LGBTQ woman of color reporting on Hollywood, it's just so beautiful because a lot of people's interpretations of Hollywood is that it's run by a lot of people who don't look like us and don't have the background that we do, but you are a voice to the community. You are like, I can't, Jazz, you're such a role model to me in so many different ways. How does it feel? Like you have the power. How does it feel to have this responsibility?
Yeah.
So it is, first and foremost, it is really humbling, right? It's like that check of like, never forget where you come from. Right. And then it's like, what can I do to elevate voices? Like, I have that position, like, but tell it like not throw it in people's faces. It's like, okay, so we have Joyride coming out, right? This project that you guys are all working on and it's amazing. Like, how can I tell this incredible story of this film and what it means to us without throwing the Asian in your face? So it's looking for those ways to do it. And then when there is an opportunity to find those windows, whether it's interviewing the storytellers to show the audience that, hey, look, so-and-so is here. They've done it. I'm the one telling this story. And you too, like, this could be a possibility for you too. In that weird kind of like way, if that makes sense. I don't know.
No, yes, totally. I love it. It's specific things where like the Filipino representation in itself, yeah. I would have never seen her in Beauty and the Beast because of your work on Beauty and the Beast. I would have never seen the Filipino script on her dress. I would have never known like the intricate details behind that story. And you're yeah. allowing all these people to be able to hear about our culture and our representation.
And I think that's the thing, like, you know, like using that example, like her was so special. Like I did the cover with her and during the pandemic, like after she won the Oscar, and like that story was just, you know, like Law, as you said, you know, like we always look for our people. And so I do that in the industry. It's like, who are our people? And she was like, she's just been nominated for the Grammys. And I was like, okay, but she does this song in Judas and the Black Messiah. And I feel like, you know, my thing was like, I wanted a cover story that year. I'd done Stacey Abrams and Viola Davis the year before, but I was like, this is special because her is half Filipina. And she's like, you know, there's got to be like some fun story here to tell. And then there was buzz around the song. And I was like, is she going to get nominated? And so like, I started putting the idea for that cover way back in when, and then you know, she went and won the Oscar and then we got her on the cover. And it was so great to sit down with her and be like, hey, what's it like growing up across two communities where you're like, you know, or two, yeah, you know, two cultures, like, how do you identify it? And like, that story is so relevant to all of us because, you know, we're Filipino, but we're growing up in Britain or America. And it's like this identity conflict that you have. Anyway, so fast forward to her doing Beauty and the Beast, like, you know, I'm such a Disney person. Disney is not paying me to say this. I just love Disney. And, yeah. You know, when they were like, oh, we're doing the 30th anniversary, like, come down. And I love the costume designer, Marina Tobina. And it was like this opportunity to be like, okay, tell the story of costume. And then she shows me this apron. And to the normal eye, it just looks like script, right? And I learned something from that too, because she's like, this is something that we wanted to weave in. And I was like, what is that? She goes, this ancient like Filipino script. And you're like, oh my God. And it's like, that was the story of like, it's a costume, but like, it's a subtle message for us, like of what someone like her is doing to represent the community. And it's like, I'm telling a story that didn't need to be my lead, right? I could have gone any other way. And I was like, but you're telling a story about your community. This is how you do it. It's 100%. Such a complex, yeah,
way it's of like talking you celebrate story, the yeah. culture without shoving it yes. down your throat. That's, you said it so clearly at the start of that. And I remember showing my mom the Beauty and Beast musical. I was visiting home and I was like, Mom, that Belle, she's Pinoy. And yeah. I had seen it. It was late at night, so I was like dozing off. But my mom stayed up and watched it herself. She also loves Josh Groban, so I mean that was a little bit but it is so sweet to get to share these moments. And like as a mixed Filipino kid myself, and you also said it, I was, you know, we're raised in our respective countries, very very different mindset as a traditional Filipino, you know, like conservative mindset in a sense. So it is really really empowering, especially when we have a voice like yours, not only leading our community but leading the industry in these conversations that uplift not just our community. It's not about being Asian, but that's also very very important. I think that's really cool that we have someone who is, I don't know, you're just killing it. And I can't help but I can't think of another way to say that. But you know, people are saying that Asians are having a moment right now. And my problem with that phrase is that moments are fleeting, right? Like, so who knows how long it'll last. And then on top of that, like, as someone in the industry myself, as a brown man in this industry myself, wanting more opportunity, I'm thinking, where do I fit into this Asian boom, right? Do people even consider me Asian? My question to you is, if you have an opinion on how do we ride this wave, how do we get more brown Asians on screen? How do we make representation less of a, I guess gimmick is the word that comes to mind, but like, how do we make it last? If you have any thoughts on that.
I think, you know what, going back to Joyride, I think that's like one of the best examples, right? Like, all props to Adele Lim, who was one of the best storytellers. Like, anytime I see her name on a credits, like, you know what you're going to get in for. Like, the representation is going to be so authentic. And Joyride, again, nobody's paying me, Lionsgate is not paying me or anything to say this. I have to put the disclaimer, but
I can confirm this.
Thank you. I think we're like the biggest fans, right? So that is a story of, yes, it's got four Asian leads, but it's a story about, you know, friends who go on a trip and they get messy, right? And how do you continue that? Like, you tell stories like this. It is like, it's kind of like The Hangover / Girls Trip, that we have these stories too. They just need to be told. And it's like, it's a comedy. Like, you watch any promo for it right now, it's like, this is a comedy. It's a messy comedy. Everybody can enjoy this. Oh, wait, but in the background, like, here's a fun little story. It's like Asia. It's about Asian representation. Everything Everywhere All at Once. Same thing. It's like, here's a multiverse story, ultimately about, you know, a family that is going through things. And it's like, you know what? You can all relate to that. Hey, guess what? It's got like the best AAPI actors representing the story. And there's a little bit of culture in there, like Joy being like, you know, gay and the parents going through a divorce. Cause hey, Asian parents get divorced too, right? So it's like, you continue telling those stories without slapping the AAPI thing in your face. And I think that's how we do it, right? Maybe.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm in. You guys hear that out there? Keep writing.
Keep writing. Well,
I know there's a writer's strike, but keep writing.
Keep coming up with the ideas.
Jot get your down money, and though. Then hold them for later.
Get your money, but also ruminate a little bit.
Yeah. You can tell us stories. Yeah.
Speaking on writing, though, that Variety cover where it just said no words on it, that was, I like took a step back. That was cool. That was really cool.
Let me tell you the story behind that. That was not meant to be the cover.
Oh.
So typically, here's how the sausage gets made to everybody that's playing in our drinking game. So we had a cover set to go. I think it was the Michael J. Fox cover, which is out this week. So that negotiation was meant to go till midnight, right? It didn't. It wrapped to like 8:30 on the Monday night. And it was like, okay, the strike is moving ahead. I was on the tennis court. Like, a lot of us were like, ow, it's Monday night. And all of a sudden we're getting text messages like, we're changing our cover because of the strike. Let's get voices. So our magazine is meant to go to print. Most of it had gone to print. We ripped the cover up and we turned that cover around in, I'd say, less than 24 hours. Fun fact, that was the second week in a row we'd done that.
Oh, in a row. I'm stressed.
Yeah, the week before was the Jeff Shell one, which Tatiana turned around and wrote like Sunday to Monday. But that's the joys of like printing, you know,
print, yeah.
And print.
Can I point out something really beautiful? You said, let's get voices. That's such a beautiful thing. Like, let's get all these people to like express their thoughts, express their opinions. Let's highlight their themselves. Like, that's so great. Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, so all those voices that told us their stories, they helped pull that cover together in like less than 24 hours, pretty much.
Wow.
That's insane. That's like a different world completely. You know what I mean? Because like in the digital like space, there's so much. Yeah, I mean, like, because it's physical. It's like a physical medium on top of everything else.
Jess, do you have any of your cover stories like printed up on your house?
I have, I have the Her and Viola Davis. I only have, and the Ruth Carter one. So they're framed somewhere.
They're pretty cool flexes. Just, oh, that, yeah, that's mine. I love it.
This is Serena Williams, my favorite tennis player. She's not, that's Time Magazine.
When we're talking about, I mean, we talked a bit, a little bit about awards season and just like your fascination with them. Obviously you analyze them and like cover them. I'm genuinely curious what you think of award season these days, you know, now like it, we had a really exciting Oscars sweep with Everything Everywhere All at Once, but the merit of award seasons, do you feel like it's still important to have these things in this industry and celebrate these wins?
Yes, 100%. I mean, you know, the Oscars is like, you know, that's what this town is about, right? We celebrate that. And I think it is really nice to still have those moments. And, you know, I mean, imagine if we didn't have Michelle Yeoh winning, like, that inspiration is, it's amazing, right?
Like, how does it feel though with having all these hashtags and everything, like Oscar's so white and everything, but you are literally in the organization making things happen and you are a deciding factor in this, you're reporting on it, your whole, like, you are the awards beacon, right? Like, you're shining light on everything and you're a person of color. So how does it feel with that dichotomy happening?
You know, I think it's changing. Definitely. I think we have great people at the Academy. I think, you know, they've got great people on the board. I think, you know, by expanding the membership, like, it's becoming diverse. And we're seeing that, right? Like, you know, there are some fields that still have a long way to go. But then it's always fun to, like, just see, you know, those little breakthroughs, like Frederick Asparas, right? Like 2 years ago, half Filipino, half Vietnamese. And like, you know, like you said, it goes back to looking for our people, right? And it was like, oh, wait, he's fun. Like, what's his thing? Oh, wait, he'd get nominated for an Oscar. And it's like, I went through the makeup and it's like only one Asian prior to him, Kazuhiro, who does like all these incredible prosthetics, had been nominated and won. And I was like, Frederick, like, dude, like you could be the second Asian. And it's like telling that story is kind of amazing, and it breaks through that. So to the Oscars So White thing, it's like finding those stories like really early on in the awards race to be like, hey, this could happen, or like Mandy Walker could be the first woman to win the cinematography Oscar. Obviously it didn't happen this year, but she won with her guild, which was, or you know, the Association of Cinematographers, and that was huge. And it's kind of like, here's a narrative, and like if you push it, like it's raising awareness, and it's fun to see like, okay, can the story break through? Will it break through? Yes, it did. No, it didn't. But people are aware. So that's, you know,
100%.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, like we've been saying all episode now, it's about shedding light on the people that need it, right? You know, the spotlight doesn't hit us all, so where do we direct it? And I think that's a really beautiful work that you're doing. This is a random question, but I'm going to give you the opportunity to defend British cuisine. Famously around the world, British cuisine is not known as one of the best cuisines in the world, but is there a must-try dish? Can we defend it? Or are you excited that you live in LA?
I mean, oh my goodness. Look, British cuisine is very like, it's Sunday roast or the fry up, right? Can I defend it? Yes, because the sandwiches, okay, British sandwiches are the best. I'm really sorry, but like they are. Like the roast chicken sandwich, the egg and cress sandwich, like the prawn cocktail one, like those sound gross to you right now. You're like, what the hell? But like the British sandwiches are the best. Sausage rolls are amazing from Greg's Bakery. So yeah, I am going to defend it. And the fry up is literally the best thing. Like you have that in the morning, not that I drink, not that I get hungover, but like that works. Like just the fried egg roll with like ketchup or brown sauce. Just yeah. absorbs, like, you know, if you're feeling a bit rough in the morning, like if you've been out, like, you know, during award season when we're like working till like 12 a.m. and you've got to get up at 5 and you're like, oh my God, I just need like some energy. Like a fried egg sandwich or bacon roll is the best. And bacon here is so different to bacon.
I watch YouTube videos of the bacon differences, I was just like, what are they cooking over there?
What?
Why is it so different? That's awesome. Well, I will say I respect a good fry up. I mean, and I also love beans on toast. I grew up eating beans for breakfast, mm-hmm. pork and beans for any Filipino houses. So that's not weird to me. And then when I tried brown sauce, HP sauce for the first time, I was like, oh,
yeah.
This is awesome.
What is like brown sauce?
It's like A1-ish. Like, it's not quite A1 steak sauce flavored, but it's like, it's in the realm of palate, like flavor palette of that. It's really tasty, I think.
My mouth started watering.
It's got this like zingy taste, right? It's got like, it's basically tomatoes and tamarind, right? But there's like a vinegary taste. It tastes good. Like, you have to have it with a sandwich, and maybe we need to introduce you to brown sauce. Ashley.
Yeah, oh I was God, gonna say yes. brown sauce so, episode. So you'll never guys, guess what color it is.
I have an issue with sauces, and I really like sauces. As a kid, I used to drink A1 steak sauce, so this is very exciting gosh. For me.
Wait, just Jess, kidding, Ash. It's not real.
You're about to start a problem.
Oh my goodness!
Wait, but so Jess, funny. I have to know. What's your favorite Filipino food then?
Adobo.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
100%.
Another brown sense. Sauce.
I love my brown sauce food.
Are you a chicken or a pork?
Chicken. It's so easy to make. And like sometimes I will literally just make it. Like it's one of the first dishes I learned to make, like between that and lumpia at Shanghai and pancit in that order. Those are the three Filipino dishes I can make. I can also do like bibingka and cassava cake, but like I can't be asked to like great shred the cassava anymore. So I'm like, okay, well, you're not gonna have that. And lumpia Shanghai is such a perfectionist, like that takes up too much time. It's like, make it for me. Apparently you can buy it frozen, but but yeah, adobo, you just cut the chicken up, you throw it all in, and yeah,
adobo is like one of those dishes that everyone's impressed by, except for other Filipinos. Filipinos will like judge, be like, oh, I like
oh, they better. Judge you. They judge you.
But like you cook up some adobo, version. Bring it, it's a winner. That's a great choice.
Yeah. Can I ask, does your wife like Filipino food? What's your favorite?
She does. She does. She likes adobo.
Oh, it's a winner. It's a
back
winner.
In the day, remember when Chelsea Handler was dating Joe Coy and they make adobo and she's like, adobo the chicken. Literally when Jen wants adobo, she'll just be adobo the chicken. And I'm like, there's our dinner. I'm like, what should I cook? She'll be like, do we have chicken? I'm like, yep. And she'll go, adobo the chicken.
Alternatively, so, what's your favorite Italian dish then?
Oh my gosh, it's cacio e pepe. I love that pasta. Oh, yeah. That one is the best.
Are you a big bagel person, Jazz? I'm a big bagel person, but do you like bagels?
I love my bagels. Like
in Highland Park, there's a place called Bell's Bagels, and they have a cacio e pepe bagel, and it's oh my God. Fire.
Okay, we need to bring
brown sauce bagels.
Brown sauce bagels and anything else. Wait, where did the black pudding come from?
That's for me. That's for my weird my weird palate. Give me all the blood flavored things. I was gonna say, I'm a big bagel guy, and that bagel is fire. Bell's Bagels, best bagels in LA. I'm saying that right now.
I think every single podcast you plug that place.
I'm bagel motivated. I told you. Bells, please sponsor us.
I'm living.
They did an Everything Everywhere All at Once bagel for release. They did an all black charcoal infused bagel with poppy seed and salt and everything, hopes and dreams, all of that on a bagel.
Oh, you sold me. I'm in. I'll go. I'm in.
Now I'm hungry. Just,
this is too early and I haven't eaten yet, and this is a horrible discussion to have, but now I'm going to eat brown sauce and that's all I'm going to eat for the rest of the day. But
Jess, I have
dude, you have no idea. Like, it's bad. Literally, I was talking a lot earlier today and I'm literally like drinking chamoy at this point. I don't drink alcohol, so it's my drink of choice now, I guess.
I love it. It's so bad.
The comments on this are going to be insane. But Jess, I have a question for you. So in entertainment, like, something that's come up for us in this podcast is the importance of community, right? And how your network of people is kind of, one, how the day goes by, two, how you kind of get through things, but also it's who you share things with, it's who you're connecting with. Can I just know, you and your wife are the cutest ever, and I just love your relationship, and I love that, like, she goes with you to stuff too. Can you talk about how you work together, or like, do you bring her to screenings? Like, how does she navigate this crazy industry with you?
So she actually does voiceover work too. So she knows a lot about the industry, and like, to your point, it's like, okay, we'll coordinate our calendars, and it's like, here's where I'm going. And I'm like, I can bring a plus one here. I can bring a plus one here. I'm going to this movie. Like, obviously as a SAG member, like, she also has to see films. So I'm like, here are these films. And like, yeah, like, I'll be like, you're better off coming, watching this on the big screen. Like, sometimes I'll watch movies like two or three times because of that. And it's like, I really love this. Like, you've got to watch this. Or yeah. So that's how we kind of coordinate, and she'll watch films, or like, she'll just like, I'm like, I can't watch that film again. Go find your friend and go with them.
You two are like an entertainment power couple then.
I don't know.
getting there, right? That's the dream.
Getting there. Goals.
We're gonna own this town. That's what you guys say every night before you close your eyes. We're gonna own this place one day. You and me.
We'll move our tennis courts up in Mulholland Drive. That's when you know.
Goals. I love your tennis stuff. That's awesome.
I feel like we've kept you so long, but something that we like to do at the end of our episodes is to pass the mic over to you, because just like you give other people a platform, we want to give you one on our platform as well, to share whatever encouraging words or thoughts to the community that you may be having, or even whatever's going on in your life, whatever you feel like talking about. This is your moment to not listen to us and just talk.
Well, I have two things. Okay, first of all, the one thing I want to say to everybody is like, just don't give up. Like, there is always a way in this industry, and you have to work hard for it. Like, you know, I think just as, you know, believe in the work that you do and have the passion, because I think that's what shines through. Like, if you don't have the passion, it's like you said, Laura, I think earlier, like, getting jaded. It's like, if you're jaded, like, forget it. Like, find a way to inject, like, put that dream interview out there, ask for it, and give it, like, let it give you a new lease of life. But I think really just don't give up. Like, you know, whether it's doing your own blog or doing your own podcast to, like, give yourself a voice and a platform, like, let it grow and just establish yourself that way. Like, you don't have to, you know, because maybe getting into a trade is not going to be easy. Getting on Access Hollywood is not going to be easy. So do what you do and just continue doing it and build your brand. But I want to know from both of you, like, what is it that you love about being able, because you guys do so much for the community too. And, you know, I love that. And I really respect what you do, what you've done. So what is it that you love that keeps you going every day?
Oh, how the turntables.
I turn the table. The interviewee asked the interviewers.
All the prep out the window. What do we do? We didn't.
You're like, I didn't expect her to go with that.
It's the moderator in you, huh?
Nah, I love it. I love it. Ash, I think you gotta go first.
Oh, man. Dude, back to the responsibility question is one of my favorite questions to ask, right? Because this happened to me during Everything Everywhere, because I thought I was just like a publicist, right? Like, my job as an actor, I'm not booking everything. Like, I'm not important enough. And my job as a publicist, I'm just like, I'm just booking interviews. What else am I doing? I don't do much. But then during Everything Everywhere, I think I saw the weight that we have in sharing these stories and how we share these stories and the way that we speak about these films and how we connect with these films and how we, these stories are so relevant to everyone and they resonate with everybody in a different way. Anyway, I think I saw the responsibility and power of my job then. And I think from there, it all comes back to, it's not about me at the end of the day. And I struggle with burnout a lot. I was going to ask you a follow-up question about the exact same thing that you just said. But I think for me, it's just knowing that at the end of the day, it's not about me. And I can't think of it in a selfish way. Like, if I'm tired, I can't even think about being tired. Like, this is so beyond me and beyond my grasp. This is reaching so many people in so many different places, whether it be booking someone in, like, in our interviews, Jez, like, whether it be like getting Key in Variety or getting XYZ onto XYZ or just even like myself auditioning for another Filipino movie or just a movie where I get to play a Filipino or just a movie where I get to play a person. It's so much beyond me and beyond what I can even understand. So I think when it comes down to that, just knowing that I can't be selfish and I have a responsibility and a duty, not only to my people, but everybody, everything, everywhere, all at once. Loco, I don't know.
Man, if I, like, in the same way that you were saying, Jazz, I mean, I was pretty much, like, I love my parents, but they worked so hard for me growing up that I did raise myself a lot on the TV screen and in movies, and I really fell in love with the world of acting and entertainment. And I just feel really grateful to even get any opportunities to, like, get to sit down with people I admire and like, and talk to people who are behind the scenes of things that I've loved my whole life. You know what I mean? Like, I made a joke about collecting Avengers, but like, that blows my mind, you know, that I've sat down with Captain America, that I've sat down with freaking Asian superstar Scarlett Johansson, you know, like all that stuff to me is impactful. But at the end of the day, I just want to make people feel entertained or feel good or laugh or smile. The big stretch goal is, as a kid who grew up Filipino, Indian, and also American, not ever really knowing where I belong, I'd love to create a space where people that look like me or don't look like me or look like a mix of all of us, you know, they just know that there's a place for them there too. And I'm saying all this, I got to take my own advice kind of situation because it's been hard these days. I can't lie to y'all. But Jazz, everything that you've been saying, it does, I think, rev me up to continue fighting because, you know, we're here because we love it. And we're chasing it because we love it. And for me, it's like, we've already gotten this far. So why stop now? Can't become a nurse now, am I right?
Oh my gosh. And Jess, and speaking of, at least like for me, when I go to these events and stuff, when I see these screenings and everything, it's kind of when you're in the room experiencing it with other people is how we get reignited and reinvigorated, right? So can you bring up this A Night with Artisans happening on June 1st with Variety? Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, so thank you for that. So basically what it is it's kind of like a spinoff of our A Night with the Writers room, where we have 10 writers from shows that have worked on, like, you know, the Emmy eligible series. And I thought, what can we do with artisans? Like, I'm always trying to find new ways to spotlight, you know, the crafts. And, you know, it really is, you know, hair and makeup is really popular, as is costume design. So I went into sales and was like, let's do, you know, one night with the artisans. Let's have like two different categories and just have a discussion. So it's like, you know, we've got costume designers, we've got hair and makeup stylists coming in And, you know, I'm emceeing the whole night. It's three different panels. The third panel is creative collaborators. So that's like everybody else. And like how they collaborate with like other departments and the director to tell the story. And that's really what it is. It's like how each of these crafts are integral to the storytelling.
I think you mean how the sausage is made.
How the sausage is made. I will ask the question that night. You can watch the live stream and you can have your own drinking game. If I don't say it, you can text me and be like, girl, you're going to ask your last question.
You know what it's going to be. That's so cool. I love this A Night with Artisans idea. And it's open to the public, right? Like anybody can sign up to come?
It's open to people in the industry, you know, really.
Oh, cool.
But people can sign up for the live stream too if they want to know how the sausage is made and learn.
Wow, this is exciting. Also, do you have a cat?
Yeah, my cat's just woken up.
Oh.
Her name's Gia. She's named after the model.
Hi. Meow.
Good morning, Gia.
She's going to find Jen. She knows I'm working.
Aw. You got a routine down. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is so unrelated, though, but Jazz, I don't think if you've caught it, but you've kind of blown me and Law's minds several times during this chat. Like, we'll just sit here like...
No, you blow my mind.
Quietness.
You blow my mind.
Jazz, I love you. You're so kind. And thank you for even, like, asking us a question and passing on all your influence and advice to us. Like, this is incredible. Thank you so much for taking an hour out of your day to chat with us.
Oh, my gosh. No, thank you for having me on here.
100%. We're going to keep cheering you on from the sidelines, from the theaters, wherever you are, we're going to be there.
And I cheer you on. I cheer you on too. Know that I have tremendous respect for you.
Oh, and she's funny.
I see what you did there.
She's funny at 10:30 in the morning.
That's a skill.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you, Jazz.
Oh boy, Ash. I love doing this podcast. I feel like everyone comes in with a message that I need to hear that day specifically. I don't know how you...
Specifically, right?
Yeah.
It's like the universe kind of sends us... The scheduling of it all happens very, like, wow. How ironic that all of this happens and we get this information right when we need to hear it. Crazy.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I don't know about you, but... Right now I'm in a space where creatively I'm like really not burnt out, but I'm losing a lot of hope, you know, not a lot of opportunities are coming, not a lot of income's coming in. I feel like I'm doing a lot of work, but not necessarily reaping the rewards of that work yet. You know, it's like a lot of long game stuff right now. And so for Jazz to come on here and just be like, just keep going, keep running with it. Don't give up. It's just like, it's so simple, right? But it's also, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't give up. You know what I mean? That's going to be my big takeaway today is that one, we're seeing someone doing the damn thing, you know, parallel wise, like what we're doing with this podcast is what Jazz has been doing in moderating panels and leading discussions for years now, right? It's like the same idea where we can like raise all ships, you know, rising tide, raise all ships, that concept. And that just feels good to not only connect with someone in our community that we admire and aspire to like reach that level, but also for them to show gratitude in what we are doing and what we are accomplishing, whether or not on a personal level, it feels like we're getting anywhere. The work is still work. And it'll pay off eventually. That's kind of my takeaway today. How about you?
Ah, geez. That question that Jazz threw at us at the end was the biggest left turn I've ever felt ever. And it's crazy because, Law, I was literally about to ask her, what do you do how do you keep going? Like, how do you keep going with this? Because I get so burnt out. How do I keep going with this? And then she asked us the freaking question. And it forced me to reflect on myself and why I'm here and why I'm doing this. And yeah, sure, I'm in a period, like, I feel like I'm always burnt out, dude, at this point, to be honest. And I'm always, like, excited to ask people, oh, what gets you through the day? Like, what gets you to not be burnt out? And then hearing myself answer that question asked by Jazz, I guess I gave myself the thing I needed to hear today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. I mean, it's the idea that like the answers aren't far. You just need to find it within yourself kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes that one little outside trigger or the outside instigator is what opens your eyes to be like, oh man, I should listen to my own advice, or I'm doing better than I thought I was doing, or yeah, maybe I'm burnt out. And even just like recognizing your burnout and stopping, right? That's like you listening to your own advice. So it's like, it's a lot of internal work, but sometimes we don't get there until something external happens. Maybe that's the actor in us. We're not actors, we're reactors. You know, like it's in us, but we just need to have something to like instigate it so that it comes out. I don't know. But Jazz is awesome. And if anyone's listening and you're not familiar with her work, I mean, she has a ton of talks on Variety and articles on Variety and a bunch of talks on even YouTube you could check out. Definitely support her because she is doing great work, and we wouldn't get a space like this if it weren't for people like Jazz. So I'm really, really truly thankful that she came on.
Yeah, exactly. And if you ever want any like industry tips or just wanting to keep up with the industry and stuff, she's a great person to follow too, because she literally talks about how the sausage is made all the time.
Yeah. And to end it for us, Ash, as we always do now as tradition, I'm going to ask you what you're grateful for. What are you feeling gratitude towards today?
You know what, La? I woke up, I was a sleepy little lady this morning, and I'm like tired and there's a lot going on, and just hopping on this podcast, I feel so alive and I feel just grateful. I'm grateful to be in this studio in Hampstead and Records run by my husband. I'm grateful for this friendship that we have. I'm grateful for Tremendous. I'm grateful to talk to Jazz, like just have an hour to freaking talk with her and hang out with her. I just, everything that we're doing and everything that is around us is so beautiful right now. So I guess I'm grateful for everything. What about you, La? What are you grateful for right now?
That's beautiful. I am grateful for the people around me right now. While creatively I've been kind of in a rut, I think all the friendships I have just proven to me how important those people are to me. You know, like even just like meeting with you guys and producing this show, or like getting on a game night with my friends, even if it was just like 30 minutes to an hour, like being able to know that there's a space where I can voice these like insecurities I'm feeling or these struggles I'm having, and have someone at least just listen and be like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, like that, I'm grateful that I have people who can be sounding boards for that stuff, because I am very used to repressing my emotions, and it feels nice to not have to do that with the people I have kind of built around me. So I think that's what I'm most grateful for. And obviously this podcast is, I don't know, you know, like you start the day and you have like a bunch of things to do, and then we start recording this and it feels like it's its own little pocket of sunshine. You know, it feels like a nice little oasis in an otherwise stressful day-to-day life. So I'm grateful for Tremendous Talk, everyone involved in it, and I'm grateful for my people. Yeah.
I got a bucket full of sunshine.
Yes, we do. And you know, if you guys want more sunshine, don't worry. We'll have more on Tremendous Talk. We have so many amazing guests lined up. I really can't wait for us to hit the summer episodes. It's going to be incredible. But we thank you for joining us along the ride. And Ash, you're tremendous.
La, you're tremendous.
Aw, man. And everyone listening, always remember that you are tremendous.
The Tremendous Talk podcast is produced by Lawrence Sharma, Ashley Rapuano Sanchez, Gabriela David, Joseph Peralde, and Jeremiah Abraham in collaboration with Tremendous. The Tremendous Talk podcast jingle is by Jared Sanchez and Ashley Rapuano Sanchez, produced at Hamsterdam Records.